And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to, hey, Minnesota still undefeated, 4-0, following the first Big Ten game. Minnesota with, I would say, a convincing 38-31 victory, but the complete game facet of a Golden Gopher football game is still very much lacking. That being said, this team is still 4-0, and we get to talk a lot about a offensive performance that was one for the ages and one for a quarterback that was literally for the record books. But Luke, before I get into that, do you want to give folks a word from our sponsor?
Yeah, again, the Goal Line Club is sponsoring the 2019 season. If you frequent their website, you might notice that they are having their very first game day preview on Friday. This will be at Jack's Cafe. It is $30 for members, $45 for non-members. If you want to be a VIP insider, there will be a coach taking questions from the crowd. They might even do some film review, etc. It's one of the most elite events that they put on. So I encourage you to check that out. Again, Lovey 5 for $5 off both the luncheon and their tailgate. Again, goalineclub.org, Lovey 5.
But we also, for the first time this season, have a special guest back with us. He's been with us the last few years. He is my second cousin. He is former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Derek Burns. Derek, it's been far too long. People were able to get some of your thoughts about the Gophers offensive line and Gopher Illustrated about what was going wrong during the bye week. But now they get to hear that angelic voice of yours breaking down some Golden Gopher football games. How have you been, my friend? It's been too long.
I've been very well, guys. I appreciate you having me back. And as always, it's great to talk college football. So you're right. It's been a while, and look forward to chatting with you guys. There's certainly a lot to cover.
All right. So I think topic number one people want to talk about is the offense. But you know what? Let's start with that defense and maybe make people stick around a little while, right? So defensively, I am probably surprising no one. Very frustrated with how the defense tackled this last game. It was a lot closer than it needed to be. And outside of just execution, Derek, what went wrong in this game for the defense?
Well, I think that the game plan for the Gopher defense coming into the game, they had two packages. When they brought pressure or blitz, they were going to run man coverage behind it. They actually did that a little bit more than I thought they would. For the balance of the defensive snaps, they went with zone coverage and kept everything in front of them. They didn't want to get beat deep. They kept the safeties deep, respected anything down the middle of the field. And as a result of that, you know, Purdue likes to they like to spread the field, and they have no problem throwing underneath. So if you have a game plan that's designed to take away anything deep, you're going to end up coming up, and you have to tackle in space. And I think that, well, obviously they struggled quite a bit doing that. Now, I usually believe that poor tackling is a symptom of a problem. It's not the problem itself. And you look up back to last year when they tackled poorly, many of those times they were out of position in one way or another, whether that was motion or shifting or something took them out of position. I didn't really think that was the case on Saturday. I think that I might be reading into this a little too much, but I think that they just, that transition coming from the non-conference to facing a Big Ten team, a little bit faster, a little bit bigger, a little bit more athletic than what you see in the non-conference. I think they took a while to adjust to that. I think it was a game of adjustment. So I just think that with the game plan, they left themselves with a lot of catch and run routes from Purdue, and you have to come up and you have to tackle in space, and they struggled to do that, struggled to make that adjustment.
I mean, some of it I thought was, yes, run fit was an issue, and we can get into that, but it was just specifically the corners were just so poor in tackling. Whether it was, I think Coney Durr came twice on a corner blitz. He's right in the backfield, an opportunity to make the play. Doesn't wrap up, he just throws a shoulder. Instead of a negative 2-yard gain, 12-yard gain. Or Keandre Thomas comes up and run protection. He's right there to make a play, doesn't make the play. Chris Williamson struggled mightily in this game. I think we'll get into that a little bit later. And pass coverage there, I believe, on the first touchdown alone. I believe that was his guy. but he was right in position to make a play two, three different times where if he makes the tackle in space, of which the corners had been prior to this Big Ten game, it's a 2-yard gain instead of a 12-yard gain. And that's how you look at Purdue's running attack, which we talked about in the preview edition of this podcast, was really legitimately bad. And I think that's being kind about it. They had run the ball 48 times, running backs had for Purdue, and they were averaging a balmy 2.6 yards per carry. Well, King Doru on the day, 20 touches, 4.7 yards per carry, and 3 total touchdowns. There were just too many gigantic lanes for him to run through, and there were opportunities where maybe 5, 6, 7 of those runs, Minnesota's right in the right spot to make the play, just don't wrap up. And I think, obviously, Derek, with his Big Ten experience, I think his ideas of why going from Georgia Southern athletes and Fresno State athletes, and there's no shade being thrown at them, but to the skill position players that Purdue had, or at least they had through a couple drives until Rondale Moore went down. I mean, David Bell is still a very good athlete. Jackson Anthrop, King Doru, Ahmad Anderson. I mean, this is a skilled position crew of which – pass catching wise, I'd put up against anybody in the Big Ten West right now. And from what I saw rewatching the tape back last night, I can assure you, watching Rod Chance, Minnesota's corners coach, on the sidelines, he is more displeased than you were. And I would imagine, Derek, that if you are Joe Rossi and you are corners coach Rod Chance going into practice this week against Illinois, you're going to be seeing a lot of tackling circuits in practice because those two did not look happy with that kind of performance.
Well, it was a game that Purdue, if you flip it around and look at Purdue's offensive philosophy, I think they had success running the ball in part because the way Minnesota played their outside linebackers and nickel corners were really designed to take away the pass. Minnesota didn't really respect the Purdue run, probably for good reason. If you look at scouting Purdue, they haven't had much success. So they played those outside linebackers at nickels wide. Purdue, as they should, came back and ran at those guys, had some success early in the second half. They brought those guys inside, tried to get them to play a run. Purdue comes around, starts throwing, the out routes, the shallow routes, things like that. So it was going to be a tough game for those nickel corners, outside linebackers, because that's the game Purdue plays. They force you to commit to one thing. They're going to try and counter with the other. Also worth noting, got to give credit where credit is due. Purdue's backup quarterback, although physically he's probably not where Sindelar is, he had a really good game mentally. A couple of errors, interception. But other than that, as far as reading the defenses and adjusting to those things I talked about, that run versus, throwing it outside and things, he had a pretty good game. He was on his game.
Yeah, it was clear that Joe Rossi, and he talked about that, and we had that piece up on Gopher Illustrated, was his number one key to this game was don't let Purdue's passing offense take the top off the defense. And rightfully so. You look at what Purdue had done through three games. They had 27 explosive passing plays through the air. That means 27 different completions of 15 plus yards. Well, you look at Minnesota, what they were able to take away on Saturday. Well, Purdue did have 6 of those, but there were only 2 over 20 yards in the day. So Joe Rossi's game plan was, we're not going to get beat deep. We're going to see if they can run the ball, and we're going to keep everything in front of us. It was clear to me, Derek, that Joe Rossi, at least from what he looked like and what he was trying to do in my eyes, was trying to make Purdue have a 10, 12, 14, 15 play drive and say, hey, we know you can go 2 plays 75 yards, but can you sustain a drive for as long as it's going to take to score against us? Now, you look at the end of the game, Purdue has 82 offensive plays. Well, how does that happen? Well, half of it's on the offense in terms of, as great as the offense was, they were scoring so quickly that the defense, well, number one, we can get into that, they couldn't get off the field on third down. But they were also, Purdue was also sustaining drives as Minnesota couldn't get off the field on these third and longs. But Luke, what did you think, just about kind of the way Rossi wanted to game plan against this Purdue offense?
Well, I found it interesting. I think Derek astutely pointed out that they were definitely taking away the pass. I think the thing that stood out to me the most, I think you kind of hit the hammer on the head, was that, even though the Gophers found a way to turn over the Boilermakers did possess the ball much more than their trend and even how the Gophers would like to see this, right? The Gophers possessed the ball 29 minutes and 1 second to the 59 for the Boilermakers. And that really kind of stood out to me. The other thing that stood out to me was the fact that, you know, you mentioned it, Ryan, that that they struggled in third down situations. I think Purdue on the day was 7 of 16 in third downs, but a number of those were really, really long third down conversions, which was really frustrating. And again, they were also 2 for 2 on fourth down.
Well, do you know, of those 16 third downs that Purdue had, do you have any idea, both of you, what the average distance was on 16 different third downs that Minnesota faced?
I got to imagine it was greater than 8 yards.
What do you think?
I would say 9 or 10 yards.
9.5 yards per third down. So Purdue had 16 different third downs on the day. The average down and distance on those, 9.5 yards. So on the surface, you look at the third down conversion rate, which Purdue converted 43, 44% of the third downs, and you're like, okay, you know, that's reasonable. Well, when the average down and distance is essentially third and 10, that's unacceptable in my eyes, but I mean, Derek, you also get into the run fit where I think it was on that final King Doru touchdown where you could, and even that drive to start the second half for Purdue, just too many times in the second half. I remember watching the tape and the hole that King Doru has to run through. You could put 3 tractor trailers in there. Now, my 2 questions to you there would be, what was going on in the second half? And number 2, what does Minnesota's defensive line have to do to get a holding call? Because Carter Coughlin, it was just getting hooked and grabbed, and Sam Renner was the same way, where neither of those 2 guys could get a holding call in the second half, and that kind of didn't help things for Minnesota's defense. But what did Purdue do differently in the second half that Minnesota just didn't adjust to in the running game?
Yeah, what Purdue, as I mentioned, in the first half attacked the outside, depending on where the Gophers were playing. Again, they were playing the pass with the outside linebackers, nickel defenders, nickel corners. Minnesota adjusted in the second half, bringing those guys in to try and take away anything outside. Purdue started running what would be like an influence block, trap blocks to make things look like outside, bring the Gophers up for contain, and then they were hitting things in between the tackles. And when that happens, you have to be really sound with your fits on the second and third level. A couple plays, one of them particularly down the goal line. Gophers get people upfield. That's what they want because they had kickout blocks. And then the safety takes basically jumps the wrong gap, and you're left with a big hole in the middle of the field. So, I mean, again, credit to Purdue. They adjusted. That's the game they play, the schematic game they play. They wait for you to try and take something away, and then they have something lined up to counter that. So I think it does ultimately, though, go back to the fact that Minnesota in the second half had a big multi-score lead. They're really not probably going to button it down and bring guys up in the box. And Purdue knows that. Purdue was patient enough to say, you know, we expect Minnesota's going to come. They're going to be with a soft secondary. They're not going to be crowding the box. So Purdue came. They started running things first drive of the second half. They're running power. I mean, they're down multiple scores and they're running power. But that just tells you they're going to, you know, the cliche is they're going to take what the defense gave them. And they did. And I think that maybe it is the lesser of two evils where Joe Rossi's saying, you know, look, you're down multiple scores. Our offense is moving the ball. If you want to run the ball and try and, you know, put together 10 plus play drives, we feel like we can move the ball and, you know, hopefully come up with a few more plays than they did to try and stop those drives. But, you know, may really make them earn it with some longer drives. And at times they were able to make a couple plays, but unfortunately in the second half, not enough. And Purdue was able to come up with those and play when they needed it, and scrambles on third down, things like that, to keep drives going.
And that's where I'm kind of mockingly put out on Twitter. In that situation you mentioned, Purdue was down 21 late in the third quarter, and they're trying to establish the run. And I'm thinking to myself, even Mike Zimmer is blushing with this commitment to the run game, and ultimately the end result is Minnesota still wins the game, but Purdue does drive 15 plays, 99 yards, and then special teams woes kick in where back-to-back weeks with 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, the special teams unit has a catastrophic mistake that kind of puts both sides of the ball in a tough situation. But what does the offense or what does the defensive line, in your opinion, have to do to get a holding call? Because this isn't me looking at this through maroon and gold colored glasses. I mean, I had so many people on the Twitter machine at Gopher Illustrated. They continue to ask, you know, and he was incredibly prevalent in this Purdue game, was where was Carter Coughlin? Well, Carter Coughlin got pressures. Carter Coughlin also got held in about 70% of his pass rushing snaps, in my opinion. So if you're a guy like Carter Coughlin, I mean, what do you have to do to draw a flag?
Yeah, it's always a frustrating game as a defensive lineman to play a team with Purdue's type of scheme, the spread quick passing game, because, you know, on three quarters of the passing downs, they're going to get the ball out too quick for a defensive lineman to get a rush. But then what made it extra frustrating was on when they were able to extend plays or when they had to extend plays, the Gophers usually rushing three or four were usually in some sort of twist. And I agree with you. The pass rush was actually pretty decent, but they were not able to come up with the holding, holding call. And I think it's, you know, for those of, you know, the listeners out there that are watching a lot of football, NFL and college, you've got this huge emphasis in the NFL now where they're calling holding on every third play. That's not caught on in college. I mean, you still have
for as many penalties as there were during the Bears Vikings game, just across the NFL. How is it just, and again, this is kind of off topic and more just a general flag discussion between college and NFL, just the holding differences between the college game and the NFL game are just so stark. And
well, it's the point of emphasis in the NFL. I mean, that's the reason.
That's where, you know, you're trying to find a happy middle ground there, where in the NFL, I think it's gone too far. And maybe in the college game, there isn't enough of it called.
Look at college football. Like, depending on what scheme you run, you can get away with more holding. Like Iowa's zone running scheme can get away with way more holding. Like it totally is scheme dependent. Yeah,
you know, for passing in college, you can get away with a lot more. But just, I mean, did you see, you being a former Big Ten offensive lineman, was I crazy in thinking that Minnesota's defensive line just got as held as frequently as it appeared to be? I mean, from the amount of times I saw Carter or Renner or Otemiwu passed a guy and the offensive lineman's just grabbing his shoulder pad, there's jersey clearly being tugged, he's passed him and there's no flag. Am I just crazy, or am I seeing what I want him to see, or what do you think?
No, I think you're onto it. I think they finally came up, were able to get one in the second half. If I recall correctly, Purdue converted on a third down and it was called back on a holding call. And I think that was maybe the only one too, but no, it was not being called. And, you know, if I had to take myself back, I know that there are games when it is loose like that. And what the coaches are doing is they're saying you've got to play through it, because there are games that's going to be called more loose than others. And you go back and watch the film and the coaches are pulling their hair out and they're going to submit a number of plays to, you know, the Big Ten officiating staff for review, and they can ask for things like an explanation or and what have you. And, you know, anytime that's done, it's usually, you know, hey, tough luck. You know, these are borderline calls. Some games are going to be called, some games they're not. Maybe some of them in this game were a little bit more than borderline, but I think you're right. This was a particular game that they weren't going to, you know, they weren't going to call those, and they have to play through it. And it's tough, once again, against a team like Purdue that if they're not getting the ball out quick, they're going to try and extend plays. And that's where you expect your pass rush to get home. And, you know, weren't able to do that as much as they would have liked.
Well, it's just now, real quick, I want to touch on the fact that I get that people are upset that Carter Coughlin, you know, maybe disappeared. But keep in mind, the guy also tipped, I think, two balls, at least one for sure. And when you play a team that throws quick passes like that, that's one of the only ways you can neutralize them, right, from the defensive line position, is to tip balls. And they were minorly successful at that.
Yeah, Sam Renner had a tip ball on what would have been a touchdown catch or a pass interference penalty in the first half, and then I think Carter knocked two or three down. So you can tell the Gopher coaches had worked with them during the week preparing for a team like Purdue to try and read the quarterback and read the blocking scheme, and if they weren't going to get home to stop and try and knock down passes. So I think they were well coached on that. But, you know, again, on those longer plays, I think also, Ryan, what maybe made it more frustrating, a number of those plays that Purdue extended, you know, the Gopher rush was one step away. I mean, just, it wasn't like that he was sitting back and had all day to throw. It was, you know, the rush was getting there, you know, but with a little bit of a tug and, you know, guys, you know, just holding them up just enough, it gave, you know, just one count was all that was needed for, you know, the quarterback to get the ball out.
Yeah, just, and even on that deflected pass by Sam Renner there, the ref was trying to call a pass interference on Thomas there. Well, Renner was held in his own right, which is why he wasn't there to make a sack, and that's why he had to deflect it, but, you know, here nor there. But I do want to get into some positives before we switch sides of the ball here, Derek. Two guys that off tape that really looked like they stood out to me were Kamal Martin, the linebacker, then Benjamin St. Juste, the Michigan grad transfer who impressed man yesterday, was very, very good. I counted three pass breakups, including a couple of key ones on third down, and for a corner position that I didn't think in pass protection or in run support played particularly well, to see St. Juste really in his first extended game action against a pretty legitimate pass-catching core play well, especially in man coverage, I think is going to pay dividends down the line as Minnesota gets into some more difficult games. And then Kamal Martin, when he's been healthy this season in the two games that he has been, I think he's been playing pretty well. And that's a good thing because that light that has been kind of on and off and dim at times throughout his career prior to this is starting to go on a little bit more frequently as a senior. But what did you think of St. Juste and Kamal's performances on Saturday?
I thought they were very good. I hate to keep harping on it, but with a scheme like Purdue runs, how you combat that is you need to be athletic and you need to cover space. Starting with Kamal, that's his game. You know, Kamal is a rangy, fast. The longer he's played, the more experience he's gotten, the more instinctual he's able to be. He's able to read and diagnose plays quicker. And, you know, an extra count or count and a half that you can get before, you know, making into your break or into your run fit makes all the, I mean, it's a difference between a tackle for a loss and a 3-yard gain. And so that's what he's picked up. He's always had the athleticism, you know, and the speed and things like that, and good size. But, you know, in games like this where you have to cover a lot of space, you have to be able to diagnose things like misdirection and motion and things. You know, a guy like that is definitely a big asset. And I thought I agree with you. I thought he had a good game. And St. Juste he had a good game. It would have been interesting. From what I could tell, the Gophers had put together a package of zone pass coverage, but using one of their defenders in man coverage on the slot receiver. And I believe they put that together for Rondale Moore. And on several plays, that guy in man coverage was St. Juste. And it would have been interesting, you know, without the injuries, to see how that package would have worked. You know, in the game, if Moore and Sindelar had played, they went away from it in the second half. So, you know, they went to more of a straight zone coverage. But I thought he did look good when the Gophers brought pressure and had man coverage behind it. You know, Purdue, a lot of rub routes, a lot of crossing routes. And I did think he looked good in coverage. And Ryan, you'd probably know more than me, but seems to be getting more playing time as the season's gone on, and he's responded. So I concur. I think both those guys had good games.
Well, he looked like, to me so far, and maybe, you know, I want to kick this back to Luke too, but through four games, which isn't a big sample size, but on the same breath, it's 33% of the Gopher season that's already come and gone. I think he's been Minnesota's best man coverage cornerback. But Luke, what do you think? And
dude, I'm gonna give you some crap because I think you said that through the last podcast that you were pretty confident. You were pretty confident in the secondary, and then you know what they do? You just jinx them. Like you have this like incredible ability to jinx players. It's unbelievable. Horrible.
If I wanted to get shade thrown at me, I could have just opened up my Twitter mentions. But Luke, thank you for continuing to beat a dead horse. But I mean, St. Juste played well.
He did.
DeAndre Thomas and Terrell Smith didn't have particularly great games, which how much of that is they're not as talented or how much of that is they were just adjusting? And I think that's a really good point. And then I think the other crazy thing, and maybe is Jordan Howden just continues to be a guy that is no longer a liability, which is from what he was last year to what he's become this year. I mean, that's just crazy to me how quickly he's progressed.
Who's the more reliable tackler, him or Antoine Winfield right now?
The fact that it's not a snap Winfield decision kind of speaks to how well Jordan has been tackling in open space.
I don't watch the like all 22 and keep stats, but I would argue that Winfield has missed more tackles this season than Jordan Howden.
I mean, I wouldn't
especially for TFL. Winfield's really struggled with TFL tackles, but
you want to, you have anything else for Derek before we switch sides, Luke?
No, I mean, maybe Derek, just at a high level, you know, what'd you see in the first 4 weeks? We haven't heard a lot from you, you know, from the defense. I know they've looked better in the first three non-conference games. Maybe that's to be expected, but you know, what have you seen thus far just in an aggregate of the four games?
Well, I think that it'll be interesting. You know, of course I am always starting with scheme, just looking at what they're running, and that's going to change as the season goes on, but they've run a lot of zone coverage. They've run a lot of off coverage, cushion coverage, with the exception of blitzing. Again, as you get into the Big Ten schedule, I would expect that to change. If I had to break it up by position group, I would agree with Ryan. Jordan Howden has, the cliche would be, the game slowed down for him. I think he's more comfortable with his reads and he's able to play more aggressive. When you're not comfortable mentally, you get yourself out of position and you can't be aggressive, especially coming up and tackling on the third level. And, it doesn't make you look good. You end up missing a tackle or getting a broken tackle. So, I think the secondary has played, I've been pleasantly surprised by that group. I think that the defensive line, although, you know, the non-conference, a little hard to judge, you play an option team, you're not going to see that again. I think my take going into the season, a lot of youth on the defensive line, I think they've played better than I thought they would. I think that they do look young. They have to develop. They're developing a couple guys, not named Carter Coughlin, on the pass rush, and those guys look strong. They look athletic. They're just kind of honing in their game a little bit, but I think that group's looked good. I think overall they've struggled at linebacker. I wasn't expecting that coming into the season. I think that maybe perhaps getting better. We talked about, you know, having Kamal Martin back has helped a lot. The younger guys who were playing earlier in the season, particularly the South Dakota State game, that was a really rough game for the linebacker group. So it's going to be a challenge for those guys. I mentioned this last year. One of the playing in a Power Five conference, particularly the Big Ten, the challenge there is 1 week you've got to face a team like Iowa where you have to run nine guys in the box and you have to take on downhill running. And the next week you take on a team like Maryland that spreads everything out. They run with four wides, they run misdirection, counters, jet sweeps, and things like that. So that's a totally different type of game to plan for, and a totally different type of, you know, defense those guys need to run. So those guys need to grow up fast. I think that, I think that the linebacker group is not where they need to be so far.
Well, it's interesting to get your perspective because that's more or less what we've said the entire time. So I think that more or less validates us. Would you say, Ryan?
For the amount of people who don't necessarily agree with our takes, to have someone who I consider to be an elite football mind kind of confirm that Thomas Barber has not been playing well. The linebackers against South Dakota State didn't play well. And I even thought at times, I mean, for most of the four games, Minnesota's linebackers have had issues shedding blocks and getting into where they need to be. But I think there is going to be some interesting tests coming up as soon as, again, this weekend, where Minnesota plays an Illinois team that just, you know, they have been inconsistent on the defensive side of the ball, but offensively they seem to have found something with Rod Smith this year. And many Gopher fans will remember this is a team that put 55 on their head last year. So before we kind of get to the offensive side of the ball, Luke, do you want to give folks a little bit of time to learn more about the Goal Line Club?
Yeah, so for the Goal Line Club, again, Jack's Cafe, Friday for the game preview. If you can't make that, there's also the tailgate. Tony's Diner will be there. Again, you can use the code LOVEY5 for that. Note too that, you know, the money that you do spend with events for the Goal Line Club goes to support Gopher football in a very meaningful way, whether that be, you know, coats for parents that are visiting that maybe don't have such things, or even things I believe like even suit coats, etc., for pictures. They support a number of different things within the football department that is not covered by the normal athletic budget. So if you want to find a way to support Gopher football in a monetary way, do that by joining the Goal Line Club or joining one of their events. Again, you can save $5 if you're not a member by using the code LOVEY5 for the Illinois game, for the tailgate, or for this preview on Friday. I do know that the preview for the Friday preview, that is going to close, I believe, on Wednesday evening. So make sure that you to sign up as soon as possible, and there is limited space available. Again, LOVEY5, GoalLineClub.org.
And then that'll get us into our keys to the game on the offensive side of the ball, which are going to be sponsored by, for the remainder of the season, the Burns Insurance Agency. And at the Burns Insurance Agency, they know that the odds of being able to save every single client close to $1,000 on their homeowners insurance or $3,000 a year on their work comp premiums is about as equal of a chance as Minnesota has to going undefeated this year. But that's what happened last week at the Burns Insurance Agency. They had referrals come in from other clients, one by even an accounting office, and the other one from a large national bank, and they took the time to sit down with each one of their individual clients, put together an insurance package for them that made sense, and they saved thousands of dollars for it. Now, I'll be the first to tell you, talking about insurance is not the sexiest thing in the world, but it's something that we as adults have to deal with every single day. And if you think you're paying too much for your insurance, whether it's your home, auto, work comp, commercial, and you want someone in an independent insurance agent, someone that can put a quote up against many different insurance agencies and different insurance companies to take a free look at what you're paying and seeing if they can't get you a lower price, learn more about the Burns Insurance Agency at insurancebyburns.com.
All right, so let's get to that offensive keys to the game. I know, Ryan, you always do a great job of breaking stuff down in Gopher Illustrated. This was, in some ways, a very historic game, obviously, for Tanner Morgan. But the offense really got going. So what were those keys to this offensive performance for you?
Well, it's going to be weird for me to lead and not have I'm going to hopefully give Derek some things to talk about, and hopefully he doesn't contradict some of what I say. But I think the biggest thing I took away from this game against Purdue were two things. Number one, Purdue sold out to stop the run, which, what is that? And what I mean by that is, if you go back and you look at the amount of success that Minnesota had through the air, and they had a ton. I mean, we're talking about a legitimate historical performance from Tanner Morgan on the day, 21 of 22, a 95% completion percentage for 396 yards and four scores. And yet the 95% completion percentage, it's great. I mean, we're talking about a guy whose one incompletion was a pressure throwaway. But I think to make it even more impressive, you have to put in the fact that it was 18.9 yards per completion. And that's just a mind-boggling number, considering it's nearly 20 yards per completion that Tanner was able to get this passing offense going to. And how was he able to do that? Well, he was able to do that because Purdue's seemingly defensive game plan was, we're going to see if Tanner Morgan can actually do this. Can he pass the ball against us? Looked like they trusted their corners a little bit more than they should have. Maybe they trusted their secondary a little bit more than they should have. And Minnesota was going play action off RPO. The linebackers were sucking up. And Minnesota was just running slants behind the linebackers and in front of the safeties, where if Chris Ottman-Bell gets ahead of steam, he can go. If Rashad Bateman gets ahead of steam, you're not going to catch him. So for as critical as we've been of Kirk, I mean, you have to talk about the game plan where Tanner is able to just hit his first read, where Shiraka was dialing up the correct play call for what Purdue's defense was giving him. You look at the Chris Ottman-Bell touchdown. Minnesota goes bubble in the slot with Rashad Bateman as Purdue's trying to show a cover two look, but that safety rolls down, and he takes away. So you only have one safety in the middle of the field. Minnesota runs a slant behind him. Ottman-Bell catches it. All he has to do is make the safety miss, and he's off to the races. You have the Rashad Bateman second touchdown, which I thought was brilliant. Minnesota goes 12 personnel with two tight ends. They go play action because what is Purdue trying to do? They're still trying to take away the run. The safety commits. Minnesota gets him with a slant and go, and it's an easy game of pitch and catch with as efficient as Tanner Morgan was. And he deserves a lot of credit for this. I mean, Tanner arguably had the greatest single season performance in a Big Ten game ever. But Kirk Shiraka also deserves the credit for putting him in the situation to where Tanner didn't really have to do more than hit his first read because they were always so wide open, which Gopher quarterbacks have had an issue to do. So, Derek, what did you think? I mean, do you think I'm accurate in saying that? Again, I'm not trying to take anything away from Tanner Morgan. He had a fantastic day. We're talking about nearly 20 yards per completion, 400 yards passing, four touchdowns. But it was Kirk Shiraka was just on a totally different level than whatever Purdue was trying to do defensively.
Yeah, the game plan was was a lot more robust than it was in the non-conference season. In the passing game, I know that on television it appears they're running the same play, but many times the slant or the posts that they're running is out of a different formation. It's out of a different person. A couple times they ran Otman Bell, on a slant from the outside position when Purdue was in zone. Purdue would mix things up. They would run man, and then they would come back, and Rashad Bateman would run a slant or, more of a dig or a cross out of man-to-man coverage from the slot position. So they were moving guys around a lot. Yes, a lot of them are RPO, but it was a good job game plan-wise, but then mentally, as well as Tanner Morgan threw the ball, mentally had a very, very good game. Purdue tried disguising coverages at times, tried to give a cover two look. Most of the game they were in a one high, deep safety. So his ability to identify where the RPO is, read the defense, look at the way the defense reacts, and all that stuff before the throw has to be right. And obviously, you see the numbers. We're very on and then hitting guys in stride, that's delivering the ball in the spots. I mean, you don't have those numbers unless you're hitting in both of those phases. So, in the passing game, they mixed it up quite a bit, with different formations. And you mentioned the second half, they hadn't run two tight end personnel the whole game. They come out in the second half, they show them that look. Minnesota sees that Purdue's going to try to go man-to-man coverage on the outside, and they run a slant and go to Bateman. And, that's a tough job to ask that corner to cover that. And if it's blocked up, that's going to be tough to match up with. So they took advantage of that. So they had a lot of bullets to throw in this game, and I think it was game planned well. I would just say overall, what they're trying to do is run more of the four and five wide receiver personnel. I think more than we've seen at any time during the time that Kirk Soraka and PJ Fleck have been here. And I think what that does, particularly in this game, is it forces, if you're going to try, as you mentioned, Ryan, if you're going to respect the run and try to stop the run, then you're going to have to play either deep with your safety, which is going to leave that RPO open underneath, or if you start bringing up those safeties, they're going to throw a seam or throw a slant and go or throw behind the safety. So it puts Purdue, it forces Purdue into a situation where they have to choose one or the other. And they chose to remain stout up front, remain aggressive with their front seven, but stay back with their safety. And that, I feel for that, one high free safety for Purdue. That's a he had a rough day, and that's a tough job that he was asked to do.
When you're asked to be one-on-one in space with Rashad Bateman, Amon Bell, or whoever it was out there, potentially Tyler Johnson, and they already have a head of steam, and it's you or it's going to be 70, I mean, I think that's a really tough ask, but it's a disadvantageous game plan for Purdue. I think he had far too much confidence in his secondary compared to what Minnesota has in talent at the wide receiver position, but that's why Purdue's defense, particularly isn't great.
Yeah, they haven't been particularly great all season, right? They were giving up, 31 points per game? So the fact they gave up 38 to a Big Ten team probably shouldn't be a huge surprise.
Well, yeah, we're not saying they're the 85 Bears, but the fact that Minnesota could have exploited them drive after drive after drive, and that kind of brings me to the offensive line where you saw some changes on the interior where John Michael Schmitz, number 60, mixed into the game at center, and that pushed Connor Olsen to either guard spot at times, giving Curtis Dunlap a break or Blaze Andres a break. But when, you know, Minnesota was in that kind of smaller personnel, when you go from Curtis Dunlap at 6'5", 360 to John Michael Schmitz at 6'2", 6'3", 300, you get a little bit more agile. And that's where we've been critical as anyone about the inside zone after inside zone after inside zone in the non-conference. Well, Derek, to me, I mean, Kirk Shiraka took off the pants and he was freewheeling on Saturday. We saw outside zone at, you know, instead of one or two plays, five, six, seven plays of outside zone. We saw some power. We didn't just see inside zone. And just that alone, I mean, how can you not be excited about it? What did you think of the offensive line's performance? And would you agree that you saw Kirk Shiraka maybe go from 90-95% inside zone to maybe 60-65%?
Yeah, well, that was definitely a change. And I think he more than likely probably kept some of that close to the vest of the non-conference season and certainly put together a much more diverse game plan. It was something that we talked about in the Q&A a week or two ago, that I think those guys needed some help. You know, if you're asked to defend a run game that's very vanilla and very straightforward, you can start to cheat. You can start to anticipate quicker, and it makes it that much harder for the offensive line. So in addition to running more of the four and five wide receiver sets that might take another guy out of the box, they needed to mix it up with the play calling and ask those defenders to defend more of the field and to respect some of those other plays. And I think it helped them out this game. You know, the offensive line has struggled to block movement, you know, the stunts and blitzes and things like that in the past and the run game. And, you know, it's something that they need to develop more consistency in as they come along. If I can take a step back, we've been talking on the podcast for years. And how many years has it been that we've been talking about the offense having consistency but a lack of big plays? I mean, those are the two things you need out of an offense that's really, mm-hmm. really –
And this was really, you know, the first game that they've shown to have that ceiling. We're talking about an offense that had eight passing plays over 20 yards and four different passing plays of over 40 yards, where even in the non-conference, Derek, they weren't able to generate a ton of big plays on a consistent basis. Well, that surely wasn't the case on Saturday. They were able to do it time after time after time.
Yeah, and I think that's the final thing they need to develop, and it starts with the offensive line, but also involves the running backs, is they need to develop more consistency. So to answer your question, I think they took a step forward this game. I think they were helped by a more diverse game plan. You know, my opinion, I know that the coaches have alluded to the fact that this offensive line might not be designed for things like outside zone and jet pass and things, because that asks the offensive line to run more. You know, I said it last year and I'll say it again. I think they blocked that fine. You know, is that their best strength? Is that what they're, you know, best at? Probably not. But to me, it's not to the point that it's such a liability that they have to throw that play out the window. I mean, they ran outside zone several times on Saturday, and I think it was blocked fine. I mean, it wasn't perfect. They had a couple things on the edge could have been better, but it really helps because it asks, you know, the Purdue linebackers to have to defend more of the field and respect that play. You saw, I think Rodney's longest play of the game was an outside zone. And if you watch that back, the Purdue blitz, the front side linebacker, the Gophers were able to pick that up. But the backside linebacker is usually the person that makes the tackle on outside zone. And if you watch them on that play, he's sitting back thinking he's waiting for the cutback. He's thinking it's inside zone. This is what I practiced all week. This is what Minnesota runs. I'm going to sit back between the guard and the tackle. I'm going to wait for him to cut back, and I'm going to make the tackle, you know, for a 1 yard gain. Well, it was outside zone, so Rodney kept it front side. They picked up the blitz and there's nobody there. Rodney was untouched to the safety. So if they start running that well, then the defense has to adjust. They have to pursue play side in order to run that down, and that will open up inside zone. That will open up the cutback, because that backside linebacker is going to overrun and it's going to open up lanes on the backside.
So I want to just go back to the explosive plays, right? In years past, we've begged Gopher coaching staffs to take risks and take chances, right? Because they've basically just pounded the ball, and been very risk averse. I wouldn't say that in this game it was so much that, you know, they broke out because they were taking risks. I think this is a result of personnel, right? They're running their offense. Their personnel is just making the bigger play, right? Rashad Bateman, you know, he averaged almost 30 yards per reception. Chris Ottman Bell,
six receptions, which is just like stupid.
This is a personnel thing. Like, this is arguably as good a wide receiver core that I can remember in my lifetime, which is not terribly long relative to.
For my lifetime, my 27 years on this planet, this is the best Gopher receiving core I've seen 1-4. Derek, what do you think? You've been in this program and around this program longer than I have, with Tyler Johnson, Rashad Bateman, Chris Ottman Bell, and even throwing Demetrius Douglas. 1-4, where do you think those guys stack in the Minnesota wide receiver room history in terms of talent?
I don't think they've had this amount of depth. They've had, you know, Minnesota over the past couple decades has had some really good receivers, but you hit on it, not this many at one time. And I think, you know, over the first four games, I think that's been the difference. Tyler Johnson's still a fantastic wide receiver. Rashad Bateman, they're utilizing him differently, different than what they did last year, only because I think he's another year older. I think he has a little bit more comfort with the offense. But I think probably Chris Ottman Bell, and maybe not so much on Saturday, but before Demetrius Douglas, that's been the difference this year. Defenses are doing what they can to try and take away certain routes with Tyler Johnson, other things with Rashad Bateman, and you can only do so much. And like we touched on a few minutes ago, they're going to leave Chris Ottman Bell in a situation where they're running zone on the backside and he's up against the safety. Well, why are they doing that? Because they've got on the other side of the line of scrimmage, they have Rashad Bateman and Tyler Johnson. So it creates, going down that sequence that creates big problems for a defense, because you're not able to, with your secondary, you're not able to cover those guys. And just to quickly touch on your point, Luke, about having the different personnel, I think most of the better Big Ten defenses are going to try and play more man under two. So they're going to try to play man coverage with two high safeties. And if they're really good, and it's depending on the down and distance, they're going to try to play a lot of press. Well, there were times in years past where the only thing we could run against press coverage was maybe a comeback, maybe an out route. We just didn't have the personnel to, on the crossing routes and the slants and rub routes and things like that, just to get open against man coverage. And that's really limiting, because now you're able to use those safeties and run support. You can take away anything deep, because 50-50 ball is out of the question. And it's like cutting off one of your legs. You're trying to run, you know, offense with one leg, and it's very limiting. So the personnel this year is that it opens up all the other doors, because it's going to be interesting to see. There will be Big Ten defenses that are still going to challenge that. There's great defenses in the Big Ten, and they're going to try to match up, and they're going to try to run press coverage and take away some of those things. And it's going to be exciting to see how, this group that's done so well so far, how they match up as we go forward.
Yeah, and I think we are all not naive to the fact that Purdue is not going to be the best defense that they face, right? But it will be fun to see how they can rise to the occasion against better defenses like Wisconsin, you know, like Penn State, etc. Northwestern too. I mean, you watch Northwestern on Saturday against Wisconsin, you know, they're still one of the most stingy defenses that you're going to run into. So it will be fun to see how this offense can perform.
Not everybody's going to be Purdue in terms of defensive efficiency. But that being said, boys, you look at the next 2 weeks, I mean, Illinois' defense has been as worse, if not even worse. Just the grammar there was horrendous, and I apologize if that cringed.
As bad or even worse?
As bad or even worse than Purdue has been. And then Nebraska, if you even mention blackshirt defense to me, I'm just going to punt you to the moon with how horrendous their defense has been. So the next 2 weeks for Minnesota, yes, it's going to get much more difficult come November. You're going to be facing three teams that are ranked in the top 15 right now. But for October coming up here, starting this weekend against Illinois, in theory, I mean, Minnesota's going to be able to put up 30 more points on the board. And Derek, if they're going to be able to do that, Rodney Smith is going to have the game like he did on Saturday, where 22 carries on the day, 115 yards, 5 yards per carry. I thought that was Rodney's best game of the year. Now, I also think that the Minnesota running back room through four games hasn't done their offensive line a lot of help. Now, Roddy Smith's been coming back from injury. Shannon Brooks, I didn't think particularly played. I think he played far too amped up. I thought he was just hitting the line at 100 miles an hour and wasn't being patient, wasn't keeping his eyes up. But what did you think of Rodney Smith's game on Saturday, being able to help out his offensive line? I mean, there were more holes for him to run through than previous weeks. And then what have you thought about the running back room as a whole? Because I don't know that they've been doing this offensive line much help.
Yeah, it's been a little bit puzzling to me, to be honest. You know, if you start with the expectations going into the season, obviously high expectations for the receiver unit, but then also really high expectations for the running backs, given the guys they had coming back off of injury and so forth and experience. And I think it's been underwhelming. I think, you know, specifically on Saturday, I do think that was Rodney's best game. I think things are just starting to come along for him, but I think the most troubling part is just then the ability to make a guy miss, to make that first guy miss, to break a tackle, just hasn't been there like it has in the games in the past when they've really been clicking as a unit. I think they're running hard. Rodney's, you know, when Moe's been in there, really everybody, they've been running hard, and you know, they put their head down, and you know, the blocking, to be fair, the blocking hasn't been where it's needed to be for much of the season so far, and so those guys have had to put their head down and try and get what they can. But there have been a number of times where you know, there's six blockers and the defense has six in the box. They get a hat on a hat. Maybe it's not clean, but then here comes the safety up, and that's the guy you got to make miss. Now, it's not expected you make him miss 10 out of 10 carries, but you got to make him miss once in a while. You got to either break a tackle, you know, put a move on, what have you. And there's been a number of times this year where that secondary player comes up in force and you don't have a blocker for him, and he's making the tackle. You know, a lot of, I just don't think the vision's been there this year. And again, the kind of the twitch that we've seen in the past. And I don't know that, you know, my mind goes to why. And I don't know if, you know, again, you've got guys coming off long periods of having not played. That could be a factor. You're also talking about it's 2019. Probably not a lot of tackling is done in practice. You know, these guys' live reps are limited. It just seems like it's taken them a little bit longer to develop. And so I think better on Saturday. I think Rodney had a better game. Again, still running hard, but then, you know, was able to break some tackles and be a little bit shiftier. But I think overall that group has not yet lived up to expectation.
I also think it was interesting, Luke, that you look at the running back rotation on Saturday. Rodney Smith, 22 carries, Shannon Brooks, 5. And I believe Mo Ibrahim was only on the field for one snap, and that was the Tyler Johnson back pylon throw at the end of the first half. And it was like, that surprises me. Now, here's what I'll say. I think Mo Ibrahim is much more injured than PJ Fleck led to believe, which, shocker, Fleck may not be always accurate with the media about how injured kids are. But I don't think Mo Ibrahim is 100% yet, and Minnesota, frankly, doesn't need him until he is 100% between Smith and Brooks. Let him rest up and get to 100% for the latter half of October and early November. And I mentioned Shannon Brooks. I thought he was running a little bit too amped up at times, and I think the game will start to slow down for him hopefully as soon as this upcoming week against Illinois. But if all three are healthy, Luke, what do you think the touch distribution should be? And then, Derek, I'd be curious to get your thoughts as well. If you have Rodney Smith, Shannon Brooks, and Mo Ibrahim, and you got 30 carries or 30, 35 carries to throw around in a game, how are you dividing them between Smith, Brooks, and Ibrahim?
Yeah, this might shock some people. I want it to be like 60-40 Smith and Brooks. I get that Ibrahim, you know, he was good last year, but I don't think he is nearly as good as Smith and Brooks. But, yeah, that would probably be my preference.
Derek, question to you.
I think that if I had to guess, it may depend on the personnel packages that Minnesota's game planning for. I think that if Minnesota's game planning for a team that they plan to run out of more double tight end formations, that might be a game that you're going to see more out of Mo. I think Mo is very good. He's probably the strongest of the three. We saw what he did last year, which was exceptional. He's a little bit better in a phone booth, if that makes any sense. Stronger runner, you know, kind of able to grind out yards and runs inside zone very, very well. I think that in a game where they're running more out of single and no tight end personnel packages, you might see more out of Rodney and Shannon. I think that Rodney is probably the best pass catcher, so yes. It'd be interesting to see as they continue to add things. They're going to continue, like they showed three or four things on this game against Purdue. They're going to continue to build on those throughout the season and add. And I would look to see them add throwing to the running back in the mix, whether that be a screen pass or something like a flat route or an arc route, something like that. But direct answer to your question, Ryan, I think it may depend on the personnel units, but if everybody's able to stay healthy, probably 50% Rodney and probably about 60% Rodney and Shannon, maybe 40% Mo.
Wow, that's interesting to get some different opinions there. Now, I guess I'm going to be different from both of you, where I think you kind of divvy it up 10-10-10 or somewhere around there, which isn't sexy. It sounds like a cop-out, but I also want each guy to get enough touches per game to where if one of the other two goes down and you have to go from, you know, 10 touches a game to 15, they're not going to be rusty. They're not going to be needing a couple of touches to get their vision back and get up to the speed of the game. But I also think it helps keep each of those guys fresh going into November. So that's an interesting – I didn't think we were going to be as far apart as we were there. But I also want to ask Derek about pass protection on the offensive line, where Minnesota on the day, I believe Purdue had four sacks. Now, I've sang Tanner Morgan's praises, folks. I mean, there's tough to argue anything that didn't go right for that young man. On Saturday, we talked about it, 95% completion percentage, 400 yards, four passing touchdowns. It was just for as quickly, and I'll say this, I guess I should lead into it as this, where Tanner Morgan has surpassed any and all expectations I've had for him coming into the season. He's developed much more quickly than I anticipated with the reads he's had, with his ability to just the mental makeup. Derek talked about it earlier, where I think it's entirely underrated to where Tanner Morgan has led so many meaningful fourth quarter drives as a guy who just got done in his 10th start as a starter at Minnesota, and he's 8-2. And he's had to leave some very clutch second-half drives to win games or put games on ice. Now, as good as he's been, one of the facets that maybe hasn't developed as quickly, and Derek, I'd be curious for your thoughts, is his pocket presence. Now, the offensive line hasn't done him any favors. We're not saying that they have. But there's also been sacks that Tanner, including the ones on Saturday, where Tanner kind of just doesn't see the pressure or feel the pressure, or he rolls into the pressure. Am I completely off base in saying that? Again, I'm not taking a shot at Tanner Morgan to take a shot, but I'm more saying Tanner Morgan is developing much more quickly than I was anticipating. And I think it's also a combination of Shiraka continuing to add just a little bit to his plate each week. And if he continues to, as Shiraka had said last week, finish his plate, he's going to add more. But the things that Tanner does well, he's doing very, very well right now. But I just think the way he moves in the pocket still leaves some to be desired so far.
Yeah, I think that what this coaching staff does a good job of is they're teaching the quarterbacks to, when they hold on to the ball and try and extend plays, to keep their eyes up. So they're not bringing Tanner's not bringing his eyes down and tucking his head down and running with the ball. Now, that's good. However, you do have to develop. It's a feel. I mean, it's a vision and a peripheral vision and a feel. Yeah, it does. You have to develop that and get comfortable with stepping up versus taking an angle, you know, back, depending on where the pressure is coming from. And I think it's fair to say that there's room for improvement there. As you know, you touched on it. The rest of his game, you can't get much more sharp than he was on Saturday. And he's done, he's exceeded my expectations certainly this year, and done well and in many different scenarios within the game. And again, played exceptional on Saturday, but that is one area that I think is important. I touched on it earlier, and this also kind of, you know, bleeds over into the pass blocking, which I know we're going to get into. As they see more press coverage and as they see more tight coverage with Big Ten teams later in the year, the key to this thing might be extending plays on offense. And the reason I say that is you look at the strength being the receiving core. I don't know if you believe that's where your strength is and you believe that the Gophers have as good a receiving core as anybody in the Big Ten, then I think being able to extend plays and ask the defense to try and cover those receivers for an extended amount of time is where it's going to put a lot of pressure on the defense. So I think it's going to be key to have Minnesota's offensive line continue to improve pass blocking, which needs to get better. But then back to your point, Ryan, the pocket presence and being able to, for Tanner to be able to extend the play, whether that's stepping up or taking an angle back towards the sideline and giving those guys time to get open, that's going to be that could be deadly with having that receiving core of giving them more time to get open.
All right, so I don't know. You guys have any last parting thoughts on offense? Otherwise, I do want to talk some special teams before we close out.
Eric? I would just say that, you know, mentally those guys are doing better pass blocking. They've struggled in the non-conference season, again, picking up the stunts and blitzes. I think technique-wise and physically they still have to improve, but mentally they're picking things up quicker, and it's nice to see because they're going to continue to see that, and they're going to see good pass rushes, you know, out of these defenses coming in the Big Ten. But as I mentioned, if they're able to improve on that and be able to give a little bit more time, I think that's going to, as well as the receiving corps playing, it can only get better for them.
I'm also hoping that we see Kirk Soraka go back-to-back weeks. Now, you can't, I mean, folks, you can't expect this team to, this offense anyway, to average nearly 10 yards per play, 20 yards per pass completion. This isn't Oklahoma. And we don't have Jalen Hurd out there at quarterback and the skill position players that they have there and the anemic defenses in the Big 12. But I would love to see when Illinois comes into TCF Bank Stadium this Saturday afternoon that there is a more diverse game plan like there was against Purdue and not like the ones that were seemingly very vanilla and let's play not to lose instead of let's go out there and put a foot on the jugular like we saw against Purdue. That's what I'm hoping transitions away, because it's clear that the things that Tanner Morgan do well right now, so does the rest of the Minnesota offense. And so how does Kirk Soraka continue to put a little bit more on the plate of Tanner Morgan, who, yes, you got to be team process over the results to an extent, but the results speak for themselves, and Tanner breaking a Big Ten passing record history with a 95% completion percentage, which again, is even more impressive because it's 19 yards per completion. So I'm hoping that we see this aggressive Soraka come into TCF Bank Stadium on Saturday and give those home fans that have seen some less than stellar game planning performances or some, you know, gutless calls at times. I hope we see him get aggressive against a team that I know that PJ Fleck and the staff really want to beat in Illinois.
All right, I'll part the offense with this. I was just really excited to see a tight end catch another ball. That was exciting to me.
Hey, another tight end target, another catch. What are we up to, 3 through 4 games?
Yeah, part of that Soraka
pie. We're right on pace.
Part of that Soraka pie, right?
Part of that Soraka pie, but unfortunately, right, there was some more pie in the face of Rob Wenger's special teams units this weekend.
Yeah, and unfortunately, special teams still seems to be a area where they really lack consistency, and it's almost come to bite them a couple of times here. I guess probably the biggest gaffe this week was the onside kick, which I'll ask this question to both of you. I don't understand why more teams don't do a middle onside kick. Like, it seems like everybody's set up to defend the perimeter, right? In a middle onside kick, like, if you don't have the layer of defense behind someone like a Seth Green, if it gets by him, You know, typically what you're trying to do is Seth Green would be the blocker, right? Trying to defend the guy in front, behind him to make the play. But that I find interesting that you don't see this more often. Any thoughts as to why they don't do that? Or would you like to see other teams do that more often? I'll maybe start with you, Derek.
Well, I would have to go, I mean, really literally read the rule out of the rule book now, because it's changed. The onside kick rules have changed considerably over the last few years. And perhaps the reason you don't see it more is you used to be able to, for example, if you went with the center onside kick, you could run all 10 non-kicking players right through the middle. And that was a strategy. You kick in the middle and you plow through that first line and just you try and almost, you know, run over the guy trying to make the tackle. But I believe the rule stayed now. You can only have a certain number of kick coverage players covering a portion of the field. So what you're asking to have happen is exactly what happened. You try and go with a center kick, and there's the guy that is there to feel that you're hoping that he muffs it, and then one of those two or three coverage defenders that you have come down and pick it up. But you probably don't see it more because you can't stack the center of the field with you know, kick coverage guys. That would be my guess.
I just overall, Luke, it's the second straight week where it's been 6 minutes left in the game. Minnesota's got an opportunity to, all they have to do is complete the process of a special teams play. Yet here we are. And, you know, 2 weeks ago against Georgia Southern, Michael Lance is kicking what I believe is like a 35, 38 yard field goal to put Minnesota up 11 with 6 minutes to go. Blocked and returned for a touchdown.
Which this did you note that they made a change now to how they're blocking field goals?
You're the elite special teams mind. What kind of change did you see?
They moved Faalele and I believe Schluter inside to guard instead of keeping them at tackle.
Interesting.
You should check your GIF rewinds. See if it's there.
I guess I wasn't paying as close of attention.
I was paying attention to that, and that's where they had shot that gap, right? So that was obviously a change that they made because they'd gotten pressure up the middle already.
And then 6 minutes left in the game this week, Minnesota's up 14. All they have to do is recover a onside kick, and this game can be put on ice with the way Minnesota's offense moved the ball in the day. Well, the bounce is 2 feet in front of them as Green bends down to grab it. Hits him in the face, deflects literally into the arms of a Purdue recover guy on special teams. And special teams just can't be easy with this unit. And it's been the kickoff unit at times, the Georgia Southern game again. Minnesota retakes the lead with like 30 seconds to go. Grant Reiersay punts it out of bounds or kicks it out of bounds. Okay, kickoff unit, kickoff return. I don't know that Minnesota's returned to kickoff with their personnel yet. Jacob Herbers, we can get into that. Jacob Herbers has just been madly inconsistent. 14 punts on the year for 40 average, which considering no one ever returns a punt, I think that's average. I think that's fine. Issue is only 5 of those 40 punts are inside the 20. You have for his first punt of the day, he shanks it. It goes 31 yards, which when you're punting out of your own end zone, you're trying to flip the field like Purdue's punter did on his first one. 31-yarder is not going to get it done. That same respect, folks, I'm well aware, puts 2 inside of the 1 yard line.
Which you got to give credit. You got to give credit to his coverage team as well. There, right? Like they made decent plays to get that to the one. It wasn't like it was a
right. And I believe it was Philip Howard and Tyler Newbin and Benjamin St. Juste, who we've talked about, have done a really good job all year. It's just, why do we have to go from punt to punt with a senior and Jacob Herbers, where it's a 15%. Outcome of a punt with a 31-yarder that doesn't flip the field, and then you have on the flip side of it an 80th percentile punt where it's inside the one. I just want to see more consistency there. There's too many things with the special teams unit that they continue to have these momentum-changing plays, Derek, where all they have to do is complete the action of a special team, kick the field goal, recover a kick, complete a punt, and yet they can't get out of their own way at times. Especially here in the last two games, I mentioned 3 plays that were huge momentum changers. The blocked field goal, the kick out of bounds on Minnesota takes the lead against Georgia Southern. And then you have this past week where it bounces off Seth Green's helmet, gives Purdue new life, and makes this a 1-score game. What have you thought about Minnesota special teams overall through 4 games?
I mean, I think that Coach Fleck's philosophy has been to try and develop some of those younger guys, starting with special teams unit. I think he's talked about, you know, with the new red shirt rule, playing some of those guys for four games, and then now bringing in a whole new set of guys. I mean, not man for man, but a handful of those guys bring in. And with, if you're gonna bring out true freshmen, guys, you know, even playing under that red shirt rule, that to me could be part of the answer why you're seeing some of the inconsistency. I guess a field goal unit that maybe isn't as applicable, but some of the kick coverage units, that could be part of the answer. You hope then that as the season goes on and these guys get more experience, you do develop more consistency. And I think I don't have too much to add, Ryan, other than it's been just very up and down. I think, you know, I don't know if you guys got a chance to look at it. One thing that was curious to me in the game on Saturday, early in the game, maybe it was even the first possession, Purdue goes to punt the ball away, and Demetrius Douglas lets it go. Purdue ends up getting something like a 70-yard punt, and I tried
Instead
going
of him
back and
catching
looking.
It at the 15 or 17, yeah. He lets it go over his head.
Yeah, he was drifting forward at like the 24, 22, 23-yard line. Now, either one of two things happened. He's misjudged the ball, and he thinks it's bombing into the end zone, and it definitely didn't. Or he's not lined up right, and his coaching staff has got him at the wrong yardage. Now, sometimes they can bomb the ball with a low trajectory, and it's going to get over your head because it just doesn't have the hang time. And that may have been the case. Luke, I don't know if you got a chance to go and look back on that one. But that was frustrating to me on that first play to see something – go over his head at the 22-yard line and then, you know, roll for 15 more yards. That, to me, that was a, you know, that didn't start things off on the right foot for special teams.
Yeah, I mean, it is a challenge from a special teams perspective because, you know, you get one shot at it and it's a split second and you do have to get aligned correctly, you know, from the get-go. Otherwise, you can put yourself in a bad position. I think that on the Demetrius Douglas thing, I don't think he knew where he was. That's what it basically boiled down to.
How can that happen when you've been a primary punt returner now for a year?
Right.
And you have to have field awareness of that.
Right, exactly. And I think Derek has an astute point. It's very possible, too, that, you know, he didn't get a lot of help because it typically, in my experience, and, you know, you're helping a punt returner, like, gauge where he should be, right? It's not like you go, okay, so this guy, you're going to try and go 70 yards. Like, you're getting a coach to help you line up, right? So it was one of the two, right? And he just didn't know where he was eventually. I think we really should probably close out here soon. I do want to get Derek's thoughts. You know, we haven't had a chance to talk to you much, but, you know, there was a lot of optimism about this team coming into the season. Some people talking 8, 9, even 10 wins, right?
Including
us.
9 wins, what we predicted.
Yeah, so I think I actually had 8, but, you know, whatever, that doesn't matter.
Pessimistically.
I know, I'm such a pessimist. But Derek, I guess now having seen 4 games, and the Gophers happening to be 4-0, coming from behind in 3 of them to get wins, but, you know, not really having what I would call a complete game to date. What do you feel like is the ceiling for this team so far this year?
Well, it's been interesting. This is why football is where I love football. You know, it's an interesting dynamic with, especially in college, with the turnover in players every year and schemes, and now the coaches turning over. I guess my take on the season so far is you have we're in an interesting position. The team is 4-0, and I believe in 3 of those games the team didn't play very well. Now, Coach Fleck would be the first one to tell you, well, they played well enough to win. And that's true. But the first 3 games, I just didn't think they played particularly well. And I think for most of the Purdue game they did, but as we've touched on, there were parts of the game that need to be cleaned up. And then there was a portion of the second half that wasn't, you know, I don't think they played well, you know, quote, well enough to win. So I guess what that tells me is they're kind of at a precipice of they either get some of these things cleaned up and get some of these things corrected. And if that happens, I do still think that the talent is there and there's a high ceiling. They have the benefit of a good schedule this year. Which also helps. And believe me, they deserve that because we've sat here in years where it's been flip-flopped and they've had an incredibly difficult, if not, I think one year we talked about a top 10 or top 15 difficult schedule in FBS. So they have the talent, I think, and the ceiling to do very well this year. But we're also at that, again, we've seen that they do have some things they need to clean up. And if they're not able to do that, now you're looking at what probably is a disappointing season versus, you know, expectations. So the glass half full is they haven't played well, but yet they've done enough to win. And so if you have a team that isn't playing well but still winning, that's a good sign because if they get things corrected, again, you have a high ceiling. So I'm probably not adding much new there, kind of stating the obvious, but It's been an interesting first four games. Certainly not something we've seen in the few years that we've covered the team.
And you mentioned the schedule. We've talked about it at length, Luke, where the schedule continues to be as easy as you're going to get. You look at the next three games, you just look at the October schedule. Illinois is a 2-2 football team that hasn't played particularly well. Nebraska just got Ohio State is playing at a completely different level than about two other teams in college football right now. But Nebraska got boat raced at home by Ohio State, and they haven't been playing well overall. Then you have Rutgers, Minnesota's next road game, of which Chris Ash, the Rutgers football coach, got fired today. And then you talk about a Maryland team that looked terrifying to start the year. I think they've been outscored about 100-0 the last two games. So you're talking about a very plausible way where Minnesota can get 7-1, 8-0 going into November, and then we really start getting into some meaningful Big Ten games, and that's what you want. But Minnesota, as Derek mentioned, needs to put together a full game. I'd love for them to do it this weekend and win 49-14 or 49-17 and just have a complete game, whether offense, defense, and special teams together, which gives you some optimism, which you're already 4-0, there's optimism there, but some confidence when Nebraska comes to town in 2 weeks that you can make sure that Adrian Martinez can't get on track again. And then you can go on the road to New Jersey and play in a dead stadium and a dead atmosphere and then come home against Maryland. I still think the ceiling for this team is intact, but you've also seen the floor. Now Minnesota's 4-0, and I think they're lucky that, to an extent, to be 4-0, but I also think this is the most talented Gopher team. And just the floor with this offense alone, with what Tanner Morgan has done and what Kirk Shiraka has done and the skill position players, I believe the statistic is in the 10 games that Tanner Morgan has started in his Minnesota career now, Minnesota's offense is averaging in those 10 games 30, 35 points a game. So if you're telling me that the floor is potentially 20, 30 points, you're going to be in every single Big Ten game. I don't care who you're playing. If that's what you're going to be putting up offensively, you're going to have a real shot at this thing. So it's going to be very interesting to see, Luke, if Minnesota can finally put together a complete game this weekend on offense, defense, and special teams.
All right, we want to thank Derek again for joining us to break down this this win against Purdue. Again, I want to thank everybody for listening. If you do enjoy the podcast, do please go and rate and subscribe and leave a comment and whatever on the podcast aggregator that you use. It's a good way for people to help them find us, and we appreciate that as well. Again, thank you for listening, and go Gophers.